You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa ko Kaden Tokawingua, no mai, haere mai, ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpare Thursday. My name is Kaden and I'm your host for today. I'll be with you for the next hour. Efa Akane coming up on the show for City Counselling this week. I spoke to Councillor Shane Henderson about progress for the Northwest Busway being halted, a potential funding pause for Heart of the City, and the Mayor saying disaster recovery costs are contributing to the rates increase. And I spoke to Dr. Kelly Garten, Health Coalition Aotearoa spokesperson and senior research fellow in the School of Population Health at the University of Auckland, about a report from the Auditor General warning that the government's school lunch program is not able to show if it's delivering on its aims. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, producer Pranuja spoke to MP Shannon Halbert about Labour's Congress, the party's proposed apprenticeship boost, state housing rents and the Regulatory Standards Act. She also spoke with Professor Chris Bullen about multi-pronged nicotine addiction and his new study into alternative ways to quit smoking. He aha o whakaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 539. Or Wire Maidane, give us a call in studio on 309-3879. Kawe wariwari ahi ana koutou, te whakarongo ki ene kōrero anō, he pakeheri rukiruki māronga i te pae, tukutuku o irirangi poho, mihaere ki 95BFM, erekati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Text in your thoughts on Rima Toru Iwa Rima 5395 or give us a call in studio on Toru Kore Iwa Toru Waru Fitu Iwa 309-3879. Now let's get into the show.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with Labour MP Shannon Halbert.
This weekend saw the Labour Party hosting its annual Congress with discussions over campaign organising and new policy announcements. At the Congress, the party discussed a proposal to expand New Zealand's apprenticeship boost, which they argued should support young people to access qualifications, making it easier to get a job. Labour also recently confirmed it would not go ahead with the government's announced rent increase for those living in state housing, an increase which Leader Chris Hipkins argued is cruel and wrong. Lastly, the Regulatory Standards Act came into effect this week, which the government has argued will improve lawmaking by holding new policies to certain guidelines. Its opponents, however, say these guidelines are arbitrary and have criticised them for not including protections for the environment or te tiriti. For this week's catch-up with the Labour Party's Shannon Halbert, producer Pranuja asked about each of these issues, beginning with Labour's annual Congress.
So Labour used its 2026 Congress to frame its election pitch around jobs, health, homes and cost of living. Chris Hipkins also announced Labour would expand the apprenticeship boost to 2 full years, extend it to more trades and add grants and mentoring to help apprentices complete training. What's the main message Labour wanted to send with this?
To send across Aotearoa is that we are creating job opportunities for young people. We're faced with statistics where we have 17,000 less apprentices as a result of National's cuts. We have 20,000 construction workers that have gone to Australia and 100,000 young people that aren't engaged in education, employment or training. That's not acceptable. And so it's on us to expand the apprenticeship boost program and create those job opportunities.
And the government would likely argue it is already focused on economic growth and getting people into work. What does Labour think is missing from that approach?
Well, what's missing is jobs. The government talks a big game, but the reality is we have significantly high numbers of young people not in employment or training, and the government solutions haven't responded to that. What the apprenticeship boost does is open up new industry areas for new apprenticeships, additional job opportunities for young people, and particularly apprenticeships for young women. That's important to us. We want to make sure that no matter where you are in New Zealand, that those job opportunities are created. And so that's also why we're offering additional wraparound support and up to $1,000 to support with the startup resources that an apprentice needs on the job.
Labor has said it would not increase state housing rents, while the government says increasing social housing rent contributions is about fairness between social housing tenants and private renters. Does Labor accept that argument?
That isn't fair at all. A Labor government will not increase state house rents or increase the accommodation supplement to private landlords. We've been really clear on that. We choose lower costs for tenants, more affordable homes, and long-term solutions for cities in a housing crisis like ours in Tāmaki Makaurau.
Labor has also said it would not increase the accommodation supplement paid to private landlords. Why was that such an important distinction to Labor?
Well, the accommodation supplement was created to help people with housing costs, but too often increases simply disappear into rising rents while taxpayers pick up the bill. And so you don't have to solve a housing crisis by making tenants pay more or by endlessly increasing subsidies to landlords. It's there to support people when they need it.
Is there a risk that this just pushes hardship elsewhere in this kind of cost of living crisis?
Well, you solve the housing crisis by building more homes, increasing supply, and making sure that no matter who you are and where you are in New Zealand, that support is available to you, and affordability is a key part of that.
Labor has announced support for community housing providers through a Crown guarantee. How does that fit with Labor's wider housing plan?
Well, that's the first of a series of announcements on housing. It's a significant one. I've spoken to community providers in my local area on the North Shore. They want assistance from the government to be able to do more. And so Labor's position has been to enable that and support them to do that too.
Now, for those who are stuck on housing waitlists or struggling with rent at the moment, what would Labor say is the practical difference between its approach and the current government's?
Firstly, that Labor cares about them. And is empathetic towards their situation. We know that the only thing that will solve the housing crisis is to build more homes. The national government has paused a significant number of projects to do just that. So we'll restart that. It's important that we continue to build, create job opportunities, create more affordable living circumstances, because the reality is the government promised to fix the cost of living and the economy, and they haven't done that.
Now, just moving on to the Regulatory Standards Act, it came into effect on July 1st, and just in plain English, it means that the government departments and ministers explain whether proposed laws follow principles like good lawmaking, personal liberties, court access, etc., etc. And if a law does not meet those principles, officials and ministers have to identify that and explain why. Labor has said that it would repeal the Act, arguing it gives corporate and property interests more weight than the public interest. Why is Labor so opposed to it?
Yeah, well let me be clear that Labor will repeal what is a very damaging Regulatory Standards Act. It puts the corporate interests ahead of what's best for the people of Aotearoa. It puts everything from our health to clean water and food safety at risk, and risks undermining protections for health, for clean water and food safety.
David Seymour says the Act is about transparency and stopping bad regulation. What does Labor think is missing from that framing?
Well, the thing is that we will be committing to scrapping the Regulatory Standards Bill, Standards Act, within our first 100 days. We want to make sure that people are protected from this, and the ACT Party doesn't act in the interests of everyday New Zealanders.
So when you look at Labor's recent announcements on all of these topics, what is Labor trying to say when it comes to who the economy should be working for?
Well, Labor believes that the economy should be working for all New Zealanders and making sure that things are more affordable in our current times. We know that good government decision-making should consider all of the aspects of consequences of government decisions, not just the consequences for those who own property. That is the clear contrast between us and the National Act New Zealand First government. They care about property interests. We care about people.
That was Labour MP Shannon Halbert on Labour's Congress. The party's proposed apprenticeship boost, state housing rents, and the Regulatory Standards Act.
That was our weekly chat with Labour MP Shannon Halbert.
Around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B. This is Not Today from Jess B.
I gave you my best, you let my heart break in a worse way. Talked about the future, now I'm drinking on a Thursday. Why did you approach me while you want me in the first place? Yeah, I guess that I'ma be okay. Yeah, I should've known you weren't ever gonna stay. Yeah, you flying paper planes cause you been in my head. Yeah, I'm getting faded till the story fade away. You're the only thing I know. My love, I don't wanna be alone. Can you love me like me, baby? I need to know.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
The fast-track application for the Northwest Busway project has been halted over a dispute between Auckland Council and the New Zealand Transport Agency. The agency has alleged that council planners are not aligned with council leadership. Funding could be paused for the business association Heart of the City following mass resignations from the organisation and calls for an audit. And Mayor Wayne Brown says underestimated disaster recovery costs are partly to blame for Auckland Council setting higher rates this year. He has called for a sustainable national approach to be put in place before another major disaster that encompasses a coordinated government and insurance industry response. For City Counselling this week, I asked Councillor Shane Henderson about all of these topics. I started by asking about why progress on the North West Busway has been halted.
Yeah, there were some disagreements between NZTA and Council over consenting issues, but I've been in touch with both sides on the situation. And just so to let the listeners know, it's all being worked through and it's all hunky-dory. It's just going to take a little bit of time to get through that. This is a fast-track process, so it's something quite unusual for the city, and there's been some very tight timeframes on the council side to look at consenting issues as well. So that's become a bit of an issue, but, you know, it's all good. Everything's being worked through, so we're all pretty happy with it. It's just going to take a little bit more time.
Will it still be going ahead under the fast-track process?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I got to say that council are huge supporters, as am I, of the project. So yeah, look, it's going to be all good. We just got to work out the details.
And I want to ask about the project itself. How important do you think this project is for Auckland?
Oh, it's hugely important. So transport, of course, is a network. So whenever we get congestion off one part of it, that affects the whole network and it helps the entire city. We have an interim busway on the northwest right now, and I'm currently on it, and it's fantastic, and it's been hugely successful in West Auckland. But it's still people disembarking buses on a motorway off-ramp, and so we've got to bring this up to a standard that it can actually be future-proof long-term. And so this is a huge project for the city, and I'm so happy to support it.
And I want to turn now to ask about the heart of the city dispute. How concerned are you about that organisation?
Yeah, goodness me. It is a really frustrating and concerning situation. Every couple of weeks we get something new in the media about it. I can just reassure people that council staff are working with Heart of the City to investigate all these claims and all these situations that are happening and kind of trying to reach an agreed path forward. Because the bigger picture here is we've got to support the city centre, its economic development and its residents and fantastic events, all these kind of things. So we can't really afford to have these kind of distractions in these difficult situations. So, yeah, we're working on it.
Do you think funding should be paused to the organisation as it is?
Yeah, no decision has been made on that at the moment. So, yeah, there's been discontinue or withhold funding. But we're sort of working through all this process, so I'm hoping that we'll find a bit more clarity through in the next few weeks when things shake out.
And how important do you think Heart of the City is to Auckland?
Yeah, so as discussed, so Heart of the City is kind of the business arm representation of the city centre. And so that's hugely important for all of Auckland. A lot of us work there, a lot of us visit things there, and we have more and more residents in the city centre as well. So it has to be functional, it has to be rocking for our city to succeed. And, you know, so that's our focus on the council, is to get to that point. We need to move past personalities, I think, and we need to move forward.
And the mayor says disaster recovery costs are contributing to the rates increase for Auckland this year. Do you agree with this?
Yeah, I agree that the mayor has come out and said that council cannot be the last resort funder for these things going forward, simply because we've put in about $2 billion in this program to recover the city from the huge storms and the disaster that we faced. And, you know, I'm actually proud of that, the work that we've done there, because, you know, I think most Aucklanders understand that we need to help our fellow Aucklander and help us all get through the situation. The important thing is that figure doesn't include sales. So there can be a point where we can buy and then resell by fixing it up. We can do that and that can be recovered. So, you know, so that's kind of a raw figure. But the thing is, look, we need to help people. But the situation is, like, the mayor is quite correct around the council can't be the last resort funding going forward, I'm sure.
On that point of council being the last resort funding, what is the solution to this? The mayor suggested there needs to be a stronger national recovery plan. Is that something that would make a difference?
Yeah, governments need to step up, I think, because this is a nationally significant situation when these things happen. And so, yeah, I agree with the mayor on central government stepping in. And also the insurance sector needs to look at their practices, and I'm sure they are, because they will need to step in as well. It can't just be council. We don't have the budget, the balance sheet for this kind of stuff. So that's where we're at.
And how much of an issue do you think this will be going forward? I know climate change is always going to be a major factor, but do you think this is something that requires a serious looking at?
Yeah, I find it quite disappointing that climate change hasn't really come through as one of the main narratives around that storm. And it's understandable. We're all focused on the recovery and trying to get people back on their feet. So I get that. But we need to not lose sight of the fact that climate change will mean more storms. It will mean more unpredictable weather in all directions. And so we need to step up our game and try and get ahead of it. Because, you know, it's fairly widely known that we weren't ahead of it before the storm. Hopefully we're in a better, much better place now, but we've got to keep looking for this, yeah.
That was Councillor Shade Henderson on progress for the North West Busway being halted, a potential funding pause for Heart of the City, and the Mayor saying disaster recovery costs are contributing to a rates increase this year.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Councilling on 95BFM.
Is the plague at all a threat in the modern day?
No.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the beat. Text in your thoughts on any of these pieces. 5395. This is Emoko featuring Marlon Williams.
Nanny, can you teach me how to fly?
Whakapapa o te whenua o ngā tīpuna maumaharatea ngā moe moea roihia ki ngā tohu ko te mutunga te tīmatanga mai i te pā. Oh,
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. A new study looking into the best ways to recover from multi-pronged nicotine addiction has just been launched. While typical addiction recovery methods include weaning off a product or using a lighter dosage, this study looks into a new drug, cytisine, which can help reduce nicotine addiction. The study aims to find the most effective way for people to make a clean break from nicotine dependence. To discuss the drug, addiction recovery, and what this study could mean more broadly, producer Pranuja spoke to author and professor Chris Bullen from the University of Auckland.
Now, to start broadly, what did you mean in your article by multi-pronged nicotine addiction?
Okay, so what we're finding is that people used to just smoke cigarettes, and that was it. And then some new products have come into the marketplace over the last 10 or 15 years, primarily vapes. And so quite a high proportion of people took up vaping, often as a means to cut down or quit smoking. And then recently we've had heated tobacco products, and now people are starting to use other products. There's shisha and water pipes, also oral nicotine pouches, which aren't legal for sale in New Zealand, but people are buying them or accessing them online. So there's this growing group of products that all contain nicotine, which is a highly addictive substance, most of whom are smoking intermittently or daily, and using these other products in association with smoking. So what we're interested in is finding a way through for people who want to get off nicotine, to find ways of helping them to do that. And there's very little evidence for what works out there in the world of research currently, because there's so much change happening. It's very rapid with the arrival of all these new products on the market.
Now, is the issue mainly fueled by nicotine dependence, or like a pattern of habit, or convenience, or cost, or all of those kind of things put together?
Great question. You're right, it's actually all of those things together, but underlying them is nicotine dependence. That's the one common denominator. But, you know, there are fads, what other people are doing, affects our behaviour. Also, particularly online marketing for things like nicotine pouches. There's a discount on the tobacco that's been promoted by our government in heated tobacco products, 50% reduction in the price, because the government believes that they might be a way of helping people who smoke to move to potentially a less harmful product. So it is quite confusing out there for people, what's safe, what's safer, what's harmful, what's not so harmful. And so all these factors are affecting how people behave, and but underlying it is nicotine addiction.
You've received funding from the Health Research Council for a 3-year study comparing cytisine with gradually tapering off nicotine products. What exactly will the study be testing?
Yeah, well, it's the question is, does cytisine help people to quit all forms of nicotine, particularly smoking? If we can't help people quit smoking, we've kind of failed, because it's such a harmful thing to do. There's 50 plus years of research evidence around the harms of smoking. But if we can help people who are smoking and using other products, who want to quit all forms of nicotine, they're tired of spending their money on something that doesn't do anything for them, particularly apart from deal with their nicotine cravings, then that's the aim. So cytisine has been shown to be effective in smoking. And in one or two short-term studies, it's been shown to help people who vape and want to quit vaping. But we don't have any evidence for its use with oral nicotine products or heated tobacco products. So we're trying to address a gap in the evidence. Now, the other arm of the study that people could be randomly assigned to, beside the cytisine treatment for 12 weeks, is what we call tapering. And that's what a lot of people do to try and get off smoking, is just to gradually cut down the number of cigarettes they smoke. It's just a really simple concept. With vapes and other products, it's possible you can continue to vape at the same frequency, but you could have a lower strength nicotine product, for example, or a lower strength nicotine pouch. So So there are kind of two ways of reducing your dose over a 24-hour period. It's to reduce the frequency that you take the product, or you could reduce the concentration of nicotine in that product. So we're going to offer a range of ways for people to taper and cut down, and both groups will get some support, what we call written behavioural support, which has been shown to be effective in people who both smoke and vape, just to help provide some kind of psychological support and tips for how to deal with their cravings as they go through that journey.
And the article mentions that cytosine is also a compound found in kofi trees. What's the connection there?
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? So some work has been done trying to identify if cytosine can be found in different trees in New Zealand, because the cytosine that's used in some countries around the world for as a smoking cessation treatment is extracted from a tree called the Cytisus laburnum tree, which is grown in plantations in Eastern Europe. And people have wondered, well, could similar trees that belong to the same family of trees around in other parts of the world have cytosine in them? And the fact is that work's been done here in New Zealand and it's been found in the kofi tree. However, you know, I'm not suggesting people go eating kofi seeds or pods or anything like that, because, you know, it's a toxin. It's evolved in plants as a naturally occurring insecticide, which could make people feel very sick. And, you know, if people took huge doses, could potentially make them comatose or even die. So we're not suggesting that at all. But what it does point to is the potential to have our own cytosine, you know, pharmaceutical industry here in New Zealand. So there's potentially an opportunity. And I know there's one company already interested in exploring this opportunity here in New Zealand.
And just touching on this nicotine-related harm, you mentioned earlier about how cigarettes are the most harmful when it comes to smoking, and that there's more research needed around the long-term effects of vaping. How should people understand the different levels of harm when it comes to that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it can be quite confusing because you're getting different messaging, and, you know, pretty much every week there's some newspaper headline or news article headline online which says, you know, vaping will kill you or cause cancer, etc. But we know an awful lot about smoking and its harms, and that's absolutely the most harmful of all these products that contains nicotine. It's not really the nicotine that harms you, but nicotine is the thing that keeps you using the product. And so the cigarettes, smoking cigarettes, are really harmful because of all the other products. They're just the vehicle for conveying these products to people, but fundamentally the nicotine keeps people hooked, but it's all the other stuff in cigarettes that can cause cancer or heart disease, etc. Whereas vaping is a little less complex than cigarette smoke, so that the vapor that people inhale when they vape contains, most products contain nicotine, but it also contains some contaminants and flavors and so forth, which haven't often been tested for inhalation in humans. So there's a lot about vapes that we don't know, except that the evidence to date suggests they're not, certainly not as harmful as smoking, but they're not without harm. So my message to people, if they're smoking, is to quit as soon as you can. If you're vaping, it's a great idea to just use that to get off smoking, but don't keep vaping any longer than you need to. It's not a great thing to just take up as a behavior by itself, because it's not without harm. And then these other products, like heated tobacco products, is probably somewhere between vapes and cigarette smoking for harmfulness, because they involve heating or toasting tobacco. And so you're going to get some of the same constituents in tobacco smoke will be found in heated tobacco products. Whereas the oral nicotine pouches, you're not inhaling those, you're just ingesting or swallowing or absorbing through the lining of your mouth the nicotine and not very much else. So on a scale of harm, much likely to be less harmful than all of the inhaled products, but still there may be some risk of irritation in the lining of the mouth. So we don't know the full story on all nicotine pouches, but likely to be a lot less harmful. But why start something that costs you for no particular benefit? would be my question.
That was Professor Chris Bullen from the University of Auckland speaking about his upcoming and ongoing research into nicotine addiction recovery methods.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. Texting your thoughts, 5395. This is Freddie's Dad from Curtis Mayfield.
Fred is dead.
I'm not sure of our position on that particular bill, so I can't comment on that right now.
It's a kind of bird. This is the bird they're endorsing for Bird of the Year.
The Wire.
A report from the Auditor General has found that while the government's school lunch program, the School Lunch Collective, is saving money compared to Labor's, it has not been able to show if it is delivering on its aims. The report flags concerns about weak backup planning and last-minute changes after contracts had already been signed. Health Coalition Aotearoa has also expressed concerns about the meals not meeting nutrition standards, meaning they fail to provide enough energy, protein, grains and vegetables, ideally covering between a quarter to 30% of what children need in a day, depending on their age. The evaluation found that the School Lunch Collective lunches only provide half to two-thirds of the recommended energy and are 40% lower in energy compared to the meals provided in 2022 before the program changes. I spoke to Dr. Kelly Garten, Health Coalition Aotearoa spokesperson and senior research fellow in the School of Population Health at the University of Auckland, about the report and the impact of cutting costs. I started by asking if she could outline some of the key findings from the report.
So the report released this week just echoes and confirms what we've been hearing from people working in the program and from school principals for a couple of years now. That the program hasn't been hitting its targets. The Ministry of Education staff running the program actually warned that the new reduced price down to $3 a meal hadn't been market tested, so they weren't sure that it was viable research. Two of the main chosen suppliers of the School Lunch Collective had poor performance records, and there were major risks to achieving the program target in this new model. But the Associate Minister, David Seymour, actioned anyway with no risk mitigation plan and no plan to monitor, evaluate, and manage this. So the report is just confirming what we've suspected for a long time, that there hasn't been responsible policymaking in the changes made to this program in the last couple of years. And unfortunately, our tamariki and rangatahi are the ones who have to.
The Health Coalition has discussed the difference between cost savings and cost effectiveness. Could you speak to this distinction?
Yeah, changing the program by dramatically reducing the funding, of course, it puts a bit more money back into the government budget. But if the program isn't achieving its target, then it's hard to say it's actually delivering savings. You're delivering something completely different. So while there have been some reductions in costs, the program isn't achieving its targets of even meeting the nutrition standards. So about half of the lunches that were tested weren't meeting the nutrition standards that were already set in the contract. We know that there's been even more waste in this current model. So, the program isn't actually delivering what it's meant.
And I'm curious, how would you respond to critics of the program who are concerned about taxpayers' dollars being spent on this or who say it's not effective? Obviously, there is that cost savings versus cost effectiveness argument, but what else would you say to them?
Yeah, so just to be very clear, the original Ka'oraka Ako program, it was generously funded and it was very thoroughly evaluated for cost effectiveness. And it showed that it was making a big impact on children's nutrition, their mental health and well-being, and school functioning. So that's like attention and focus, for example. And principals were saying it made a huge difference for the students. The program was working very well prior to the changes. That's really important because if you look at the long-term impact of this, first of all, kids in school who are hungry can't learn. And we know that children who go hungry even once a week because of not having enough money, they were 2 to 4 years behind their peers in standard achievement tests. So this has long-term effects in terms of their achievement at school, the time they spend in school, and long-term earning potential, as well as long-term health. So instead of looking at this as a cost or a handout, we should really be thinking about this as an investment. It's an investment in our tamariki, it's an investment in our future as a country. And independent evaluations that we've conducted over the past well, in the first couple of years of the program, before the changes, was actually showing that it was delivering excellent value for investment across a number of different metrics.
On that last point about the independent evaluation, of what you're hearing from teachers and school principals and even the tamariki themselves and their communities aligning with this perspective that it's an investment instead of a cost?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's probably the biggest investment in child nutrition in this country ever. So it's, you know, it can be really transformative in terms of the nutritional benefits. And right now, we have a huge cost of living crisis, right? Cost of living has been increasing. Families all over Aotearoa are struggling to make ends meet and to balance budgets. Food insecurity is at its highest level maybe ever. A report that was released recently showed that one-third of families in the past year come from the food insecurity. And we're going to see the repercussions of this long-term. So it's important to think about what we're trying to achieve here, which is that, you know, we want all of our children to be healthy and thriving. We want all of them to have the best chance at learning and succeeding in school. So it's actually, yeah, it's important as a country that we're coming together and making sure these kids are served healthy, nutritious meals and with dignity.
And to bring it back to the shortfalls of the changes made to the program, what is the solution that Health Coalition Aotearoa is calling for? And I'm also asking this especially in the context of it being an election year and there's lots of policy discussions happening at the moment.
First of all, the program needs to be appropriately funded. So slashing the cost, or the price per meal, from it was about $8 per meal in the original model down to about $3 per meal, just isn't adequate. And they knew, the ministry was aware that there would be trade-offs in terms of the quality of food that was delivered. And we've seen that. We've seen meals come through that are just, frankly, unappetizing. And there have been also issues of food safety as well as meals not being delivered or not being delivered on time. So basically, it needs proper funding. $3 per meal per day isn't enough to deliver quality food that hits the targets, especially the nutrition targets that are really important. Also, bringing it back to a model where schools have the flexibility to choose their own providers, where there's feedback mechanisms between the schools and those providers so that they can constantly make adjustments and make changes to ensure that schools are getting what they need and it's responding to, you know, what kids are eating as well. In the current program that has largely relied on the school lunch collective, schools haven't had the option to change who they get the food from, even though the producer is not meeting the target. So they need to be able to say, okay, if you're not delivering the food that that was promised on time and that's safe and appealing, then you'll change to someone else. So right now, we don't have a competitive market in terms of delivering that food, and we leave schools with, you know, no choice.
That was Dr. Kelly Garten, Health Coalition Aotearoa spokesperson and senior research fellow in the School of Population Health at the University of Auckland, on a report from the Auditor General warning that the government's school lunch program is not able to show if it's delivering on its aims.
Well, if you want to save money in health, it's very simple, you know. It's like shoot all the patients and shut all the hospitals.
The Wire. That was The Wire. We'll be right back.
ko era te hotaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki maua mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on The Wire for Rā Pare Thursday. Nei rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to everyone who spoke with us today. Labour's Shannon Halbert, Councillor Shane Henderson, Health Coalition Aotearoa's Kelly Garten, and the University of Auckland's Professor Chris Bullen. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is The Wonderful with Sophia. But first, there's a bit of New Order.
I'm so sorry.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.